This is the Mile High Five podcast with Carl Jensen and Doug Cunnington. We have authentic conversations about the journey to Phi, health, happiness, and some very odd tangents. We interview Phi experts, side hustlers, people on their way to Phi, and those who have reached the other side. Join us every week, and if you want the show notes and links and all that other stuff, head over to milehighfi.com.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Mile High Phi podcast. I am Carl Jensen with my co-host.
I'm Doug Cunnington.
And we have a co-co-host because Georgie the dog is joining us in the Mile High Phi studio. If you're watching this on YouTube, she is laying down at the moment, but she often gets excited and you might just be able to see her if you're watching on YouTube.
She chases her tail. She's crazy. It never works out, but we'll see how it goes today.
Yeah, and right now she is licking herself. She seems like she's having a pretty good time at whatever she's doing. I'm not going to rush the judgment. Maybe dogs like to clean themselves like cats, but if she continues on, she's going to be very, very clean in one spot by the end of this podcast.
I'll post a picture over on our Buy Me a Coffee just for the supporters, because it really should be behind a paywall, if you know what I mean. So I'm going to have to blur out some portions of it.
And she just stopped. She looks very happy. I think she needs a cigarette.
And it's a very weird, if it's your first episode, they usually don't open like this. But today we're going to talk about stealth wealth. Should you tell others about your financial situation? Who should you tell and why? What are the ramifications of others knowing about your net worth? And this question, I think, came to us via email. Carl, do you want to talk a little bit more about where the question came from and lay context out?
Yeah, this was from our friends Darren and Jolene, good friends of the podcast, who we have met at a couple campfires. They are great people. They're from the Midwest, and they were telling us over email about some of the weird experiences they have had. And it's not necessarily just with money, Doug. It was like with some of their travels. Like they said, I think we're going to go over to Europe or someplace for a month or two. And these relatives who live a more conventional life were questioning their decisions and kind of thinking that they were pretty odd and maybe being worried about them. So that caused them to write this email to us, because they don't know how to approach these people. Do they tell them that they're financially independent? How do they convey that they're going to be okay? They haven't lost their minds. They just have some savings and want to have some adventures in their life, and they're not terminally ill or any other bad thing.
Yep. And it does lead to some other stuff, like the questions that you laid out here, like who should you tell and why? What are those ramifications? So we're going to go through our individual stories a little bit here. And as I was looking through the notes, like we create our notes like independently. When I was looking at yours, I was like, man, we have really different stories and backgrounds, like dramatically. So I'm interested to dig into some of this.
Cool. This should make for a good show. Yeah. I'm reading yours for the first time right now in front of me, but I was kind of taken aback too. So yeah, this should be a good conversation.
I was like, man, what's wrong with Carl? Explain so much. All right. Well, you want to kick it off, Carl, since you kind of spearheaded the notes here?
Yeah, sure, Doug. I'll tell you my money story first. God, I'm from the Midwest, and people in the Midwest, I guess there's a certain type of attitude and people are usually pretty modest. We don't talk about stuff that riles people up. We don't talk about what are the three things: religion, sex, and we don't talk about money. But then back at the end of 2012, I discovered Mr. Money Mustache. I decided I wanted to start a blog about my own financial independence journey. And it's always kind of annoyed me, Doug, that people aren't more open about money. I can see keeping the other two things a secret. You're not going to change anyone politically. You're not, and you shouldn't try to change people's religious views. But why don't we talk about money? Because there might be an opportunity to really help some people, because some people just might have the skills. Some people know what an index fund is or know how to save, and they might have knowledge that other people don't. And the reason they don't have knowledge is because no one ever talks about this stuff, right, Doug? It's so taboo. So on my blog, I decided to do two things. I decided to reveal my net worth, and I decided to be totally anonymous because I didn't want any of the baggage that could potentially come along with revealing how much money we had. And we didn't have that much money at the time, so it didn't seem like that big of a deal either. But then a couple of years after we started it, Mindy and I appeared on this podcast, and the host was like, yeah, I need a headshot of you two. And we're like, nope, we're anonymous. Sorry, we can't do that. And she's like, oh, come on. Like everyone else has done it. Could you please just give it to me? I'm like, no, we're anonymous. We really don't want that. Like a photo conveys a lot. And then she's like, oh, it's really going to be bad if you don't give it to us. Could you please give it to us? So we talked and we're like, yeah, you know, let's just give it to her. This isn't a big podcast. It's not like we're on, I don't know, what's a big podcast? We're not on some huge podcast.
It's not like Mile High Fi.
No, nothing like Mile High Fi. Anyway, so we gave her this thing and her podcast went live and everything was fine. Like I didn't hear anything about it. And then like maybe a week or two after this thing goes live, I wake up and we have all these texts and these people like, hey, you're on the front page of like Yahoo. I'm like, what? Holy crap, what happened? And this podcast went viral and our photos, I remember there was a picture of Tim Cook and right below, and Hillary Clinton and then us, we're below that. And I was terrified. But my next thought was, who reads Yahoo News? And it's like, have you read Yahoo News recently or ever?
I did in the past, but it's been a while. Yeah.
Okay. So it turns out back in 27, at least, like 3/4 of the people we knew read Yahoo News. And those who did not read it were forwarded this. So all my coworkers and everyone found out about this blog and our net worth. And it was pretty terrifying. So I didn't reveal my money publicly, but then after that, we just decided not to be anonymous. It's been fine for the most part. I'll talk about the cons in a little bit, but I think you should tell your money story first before we get into that.
Quick follow-up. So 2017, that's when you were outed?
It was right around then, yeah.
And you had been blogging for like 4 years or so, but you were anonymous.
Yes.
So the only people that knew you were like folks that you met in person at like FinCon or other events, basically.
Yes.
Cool. Okay.
And then all of a sudden, hey, these people have $1 million and they're like 39 or however old we were at the time. Like, shit.
Okay. And that was like when you hit millionaire status or whatever, basically.
Yeah, it was pretty close to it. And it was very weird because we lived a pretty modest life. We had a cheap house and just a modest working class neighborhood and all our friends and neighbors were like, whoa, like you didn't tell us, like, we don't want to tell you.
Okay. Yeah. My money story, I don't know. When you started telling your story, you're like, where do I begin? Well, you know, I grew up in Lawrenceville, Georgia when I was a young boy, but I didn't think much about it. Like, I think we lived modestly as well. Like my dad's was a firefighter. My mom was a nurse. So it's not like they ever earned a huge amount of money. And we lived like in a normal house. We had what we needed. If I wanted to play sports or whatever, like I could play sports. So we were probably like solidly like middle class-ish, however one defines that. But I think back in, you know, 40 years ago, it was a little more clearly defined where it's like, those are middle class folks. It's like public servants. So anyway, I remember, you know, my dad teaching me how to like balance the checkbook, a couple sort of minor lessons. But when I wanted to buy something, when I was like 12, I wanted to get a CD player. And I basically started cutting grass and like washing cars and like doing shit. And if you're 12 years old and you're like pushing a mower around and you're like, hey, mister, can I cut your grass? Like people enjoy that. They're like, yeah, I don't want to fucking cut the grass. Go ahead and do it for like $15. So I did that for years and had like a pretty like good work ethic and would save that money. I was going to buy a car, which I later did. But anyway, I didn't think too much of it. And like you said, in the South, I think it's probably similar. Like you don't talk too much about certain things and people don't talk about money very much. And as like time went on, went to college and got, like I knew I was going to get a relatively good job, but overall, I just kind of stayed in my lane, did like what I perceived as like normal stuff. I think my notes here, I said, I just acted normal. I wasn't like keeping a secret or doing anything like that. And like I said, I had a relatively good job, but you did too. Like we were professionals, right? Like we had some education and some skill. So we got paid like pretty well for how smart we are. I could comfortably say that. So I think at the point where it became more interesting was around like 2013 or 14, when we were like accumulating a little more money, trying to figure out how to invest. And then we started investing in index funds, fired our advisors. And I mean, this will come into play later, but we just did that and they were fine years. We never earned a huge, massive amount of money. I did better because I was self-employed, but I'll talk more about it in a second. But overall, we just like kept marching forward. The other thing to note, and I think maybe we've said it, but in a lot of ways, I don't give a fuck what people think. And that's really freeing, because once you get away from that, then I'm like, if they think I'm weird, then it doesn't matter. So I don't remember when that really grabbed hold, but at some point in time, I was just like, I don't give a fuck what they think. So then it didn't matter if I like said something and people reacted odd or something or not. So I would do maybe unconventional stuff like over and over again, travel a little bit more and stuff like that. So this just like fits in. So yeah, I just acted normal.
Yeah. And I think that's a theme for both of us, Doug. Like we're both doing fine. We're both doing well. But if anyone, like we don't live in crazy neighborhoods. We don't fly first class. We don't drive super expensive cars. So if people see us, they wouldn't know any different. And even the way we act, I guess, maybe it's punctuated by maybe minor things where we spend some money, maybe on a trip, like you buy a guitar occasionally. We went on a helicopter ride, but I don't know. When I think about myself, I'm pretty much, I feel like I'm the same person I always was, just with a couple extra luxuries and maybe being able to be generous now and then, like I'm going to pay for the economy opening party, which is fine. I love doing stuff like that for people, but that's a rare occurrence. So life pretty much looks the same. And most people wouldn't tell, like, I've got my Costco casual on right now. I've got my Costco hoodie on and it suits me fine. Got this ugly brown shirt from a thrift store and I'm good. The hat, as we talked about in the sound check, if you listen to the sound check was given to me by a neighbor who might have thought I was destitute. I don't know. So life looks pretty much the same despite our financial wherewithal.
Yeah. And the thing is, like the splurges that you mentioned, like a helicopter trip or ride or whatever, like you're on vacation, it was a few hundred dollars. Like people do that. Like a lot of people do that. And it's a few hundred bucks. Like it's not a huge, huge layout. And same with the guitars. Like there's a lot of people I know that they spend like all their money on guitars and or some other hobby that is very expensive. But yeah, I have like a couple of guitars. The other thing is like we did wait. So like we worked for whatever 20 some odd years and then now we're spending a little bit more because we're like, oh shit, like I can buy a guitar and it's not going to make a difference to the bottom line. So we did wait longer, or at least I got the feeling that I did. Do you think you guys did too?
Oh, absolutely. We're still kind of waiting a little bit. yeah. I think we waited too long because now we're at the point where we'll probably have to give away significant sums. We're never going to make our way through it.
Yeah. Well, and this brings us to like, should you tell others? And I know, you know, from the questions from Darren and Jolene, like I think it was triggered because they were going to take a significant amount of time off and do some traveling. So what did you say? It was like a month or 2 months or something?
I think so. They were going to go to Europe and be away for a couple months, and they might have had a couple other trips planned. And obviously they told some people and the people thought they were pretty strange for doing these things.
Right. And well, what are the pros and cons? Like, I mean, you've shared your net worth and you continue to do so. And at some point becomes awkward, right? But yeah, what are the pros and cons since you've done this for several years?
Yeah. So Doug, I want to build on something you said a moment ago. You said you don't care what people think about you. And I couldn't care less either, but I do care when they know a piece of information and it changes the way they treat you or when they ask you for money, which is one of my big cons. The first con I had is if you tell someone, they might not be able to keep it a secret. This past summer, I was at a family reunion and somehow the topic, I think my mother might have brought it up, how I went on a trip to Hawaii, and another relative kind of looked at me and said, oh, yeah, you have the means, so you should definitely do things like that. So I knew at that time that someone had told her or she had found out about my stuff. And I don't know, people seem to treat you a little bit weird. And to set the stage, someone else from the same family, I was at a reunion a couple of years earlier than that, probably around 2010, something like that. And I pulled out my phone and it was an iPhone at the time. And one of my relatives looked at that and looked at me and said, "Wow, you must be rich." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" They're like, "You've got an iPhone." I'm just like, I don't think I said this, but in my mind, I'm like, doesn't everyone kind of have these by now? And maybe I'm an a-hole. Maybe I'm just making assumptions. But yeah, people will treat you a little bit different and talk to you differently if they know. And I think that's a big con. And I love if they ask good questions like, "Oh, can you help me do this?" or explain to me like what I should be doing with my money. But those questions never come up. No one wants to hear about that. Everyone wants to hear about your life, or like they kind of associate you with some episode of something on TV, like, "Oh man, you must have a really nice car," or "You must be staying at the Four Seasons." Like, no, like none of that stuff actually ever happens, except for the occasional one-time helicopter ride. So yeah, there's not a lot of good that can come out of this. And I've got a couple others, but do you have any comments on that so far?
Well, from my standpoint, like I said, like I've never shared my net worth and don't plan on it. And in my other world, right, where I blog and I have a YouTube channel and all this stuff, I have been careful to not even reveal like income or certain projects that I worked on. Like, let's say I build a website, like I've been very vague on the earnings or the sale price. So at best, I would say, "Oh, I sold a site for over six figures," right? There's some NDA stuff, you know, you can't share all this information if you sell something typically, but I've been careful to keep things like pretty confidential as much as I can. So with that in mind, I agree. Like, it seems like, especially on the internet, right? It's one of the worst places ever. But yeah, just sharing information is treacherous. I was watching this YouTuber. He has a truck camper, right? He's just going out camping. You know, he's a nice guy. He's probably in his 20s or so, and he's a creator, right? But he's just like a normal dude, and he probably has like 120,000 subscribers. So it's like a medium, you know, decent sized channel. But anyway, he had like some issue and he had, I don't know, 1,500 comments on there or something. But yeah, people are just like trashing him. And like for me, like I said, I have thick skin. I realize it's all a fucking show. It's a joke, right? That's really what I think. But so if people leave mean comments, I'm just like, that's funny. They wasted their time to leave a comment that is mean. But I feel bad for the kid because maybe he doesn't have thick skin. And like, I can see how people get depressed. They get burnt out. They're like, the viewers are so mean. It's like, if you don't like it, just don't watch. But like, don't be so mean. But I mean, this is bad. I actually read through all these negative comments because some of them were like, they were mean, but they were also funny. And I can't, as a third party over here, like I can read those and be like, that's kind of funny. And it's true. And that's why I know that'll hit that guy pretty hard. And I hope he doesn't hit depression. He's just like, you know what? Fuck those people. I'm going to do my thing. And like the right people filter through. But anyway, I generally see cons in sharing that information.
Yeah, that's funny what you said. The internet is one of the worst places ever. It's hard to argue with that. There's a lot of, it's so good, but so toxic all at the same time.
It's ridiculous. Oh yeah, we're going to record a random show. It'll be the next episode after this, but you have something about social media. So just a little, I don't even know what you're going to talk about, but I'm just like, what triggered this?
Oh man, I usually try to stay away. What do they call it? Doom scrolling, but I did it once and it was a mistake. And then I decided to leave my own comment and it's always a mistake. You should just ignore everyone. The worst thing now is look at posts about the Cybertruck on Facebook. That wasn't what this one was about. But yeah, you'll see like 15 million comments. That thing is a piece of shit. Blah, blah, blah. Or, I love it. It's the greatest. It's pretty funny. But anyway, okay, back to our original topic. Yeah. What thought I've always had is, well, I'll back up a second. When I first discovered early retirement, I thought it was great. And I thought everyone else would think it's great too. And it turns out if you tell someone who has zero knowledge about it, they're probably going to think you're insane or dying of a terminal disease, or you're some kind of stinky hippie or something like that. Because I don't think I've ever convinced anyone about early retirement. I think part of the reason is it's so unrelatable. Like in our case, Mindy and I were already savers, so we were set up to do this thing, but that isn't the case for most people. So when you tell someone about this, it's like telling them that they should run for president and that they should seriously consider that. It's just, it looks so ridiculous and so unattainable that they can't relate to it at all. And it's just dismissed. So that's another con where I don't think we should volunteer this information unless they ask. Again, if the student is ready and they ask about it, that's a great opening, and definitely do it now. But don't do as I do and just try to randomly tell people about financial independence. It's not going to go over well one bit.
Right. And I learned from you, Carl, because I think we became friends and started the show before I was like really deep, and I wasn't an evangelist or anything like that. But when the couple times when I've mentioned it, it's like, oh yeah, you just need to save $1 million. How unrelatable is that? Everyone's just like, what the fuck are you talking about? That's a huge amount of money. I'm trying to save like $300, $400 a month. So it is completely unrelatable. Like you just lose people and then they're like, this is impossible, which is not the thing that you want to teach, right?
Yeah, I guess we're kind of a-holes. Maybe if we had more charisma, like a Tony Robbins, or who's that, rich dad, poor dad. I don't like that guy, but those guys have charisma. You've got some charisma, Doug. Maybe me, not so much.
You do, yeah.
I think you should open up for Tony Robbins. Like at his next seminar in Denver, you could be up on stage, like telling people to hug each other, and you could be in the audience, like high-fiving people. I could see you doing it.
Is that, I can tell people to hug each other?
You can.
That sounds creepy.
I wouldn't hug them.
Which people?
Everyone. It's going to be an over 18 event.
Okay.
I can see just a little
hug each other. All right.
I could see a statue of you like in the lobby, and people, you know, what bronze statues, they rub apart and then it gets shiny and they do that for good luck. People,
oh, which part would they rub?
People would rub your head for good luck. Nice. no further comment.
Yeah. Well, I've heard that some of those statues, they get rubbed so much, they become shiny.
Yeah.
So, okay. All right. Well, we got a couple more points coming, but anything else on like the pros and cons of like telling others or sharing?
Just a couple of the other cons really quick is the only people who really care are other money nerds who are just curious about your thing, and they really don't need your help. It's just entertainment for them. You're not really going to do much to help them. The other big con is people who actually want your money. And I've been asked from a couple people since the blog went public. They're like, hey, I see this. Can I have some of your money? Like, no, you cannot have it. But the thing I always do, Doug, is I always respond to them and say, well, I'm not going to give you money, but if you need help, I'd love to be able to help you out. If you want to tell me more about your situation, maybe I can help you get out of this hole that you're in. And there's two things about these people. They never want to admit that any of this could be their fault at all. It's always the blame game, and someone else is to blame. And when I've made that offer for help, no one has ever responded to that. And I've probably done it like 5 or 6 times. No one has ever responded to that. They just want the money and not the help. And the funny thing is, if they did ask for the help, I might actually give them the money, because then I could see they want to help themselves. And now after I say this publicly, there's probably going to be people emailing me asking for help. And then I'll
Carl at milehighfi.com.
Yeah. Thanks. Don't reply to me. Don't call me. I'll call you. So I think the bottom line for this is there's very little you can do by revealing your net worth. It's always going to be, most of the time, it's going to be a negative. There's no good that you can do by revealing it. I think with the blog, it's inspired some people, but those people were ready. They were on the FI train, and they appreciated the extra little bit of inspiration that I gave them. But besides those three people, it's a net negative.
And I think, you know, it's, if people geek out, or, you know, if they followed you from the beginning, they saw the growth, right? So that they understand you started with whatever, like 800K, 500K or something like that. Still unrelatable for, you know, let's say someone right out of school, they're like, man, that's so much money. But if someone caught you right when you were coming up, they like saw the growth and they're like, wow, all it takes is time. Compound interest like makes this happen. That's about it. Like nothing super creative. You made some specific investments, but you could have done it without it. The other time that it might be interesting, if someone is retiring early, and I've heard a couple people mention this, I can't remember if it's one of your stories or someone else, but when they quit and they were like, I'm retiring, and they're like 40 years old, every now and then there's like a young person couple years in and they're like, hey, how are you able to do this? And then they're like pulling the information instead of you pushing it on them. And I think that's effective. And that's the time. I mean, you don't even need to share your net worth, but you're just like, hey, all I did was invest in these couple funds, and then, you know, give it 20 years, you're probably going to be in really good shape. Don't buy a huge house. Don't buy like fancy cars every 2 years and you'll probably be in good shape. Check in like 15 years.
Yep.
So those are the times. Was that your story? Did someone ask you when you were leaving?
No, I don't think that was me.
Okay. But that's the only thing where they're like, oh man, like, okay, you're 10 years ahead, you're 15 years ahead. Like, what'd you do? So, okay. All right. We do have a sponsor for today. We got Ghostbed, and Carl, I was looking at some of their offerings. So at one point we were looking at the split king bed, where it's like, you know, two independent beds that can move up and down and very sophisticated, but we decided to stick with our queen for now. But one of their other offers, which I think can be interesting, especially for folks that are maybe moving into like a digital nomad situation, is their RV mattress. And it's kind of thin, it's lighter, so it could fit like in a van or a camper or whatever. Have you thought about doing any like car camping? Because you got the Element, right? And you can sleep in that, or even your Model Y, right?
Yeah, they actually do make beds for the back of the Model Y. I haven't thought about this. I got to check out their thing and see if it would fit in the back of the Y, because part of the reason we bought this thing is because you can sleep in the back, and I'm too old to sleep in tents on the ground. I want a little bit more comfort than that. But sometimes you can't get a hotel, or you want to be at a campground, but just want to be in a better structure. So this, I think, would be a super good solution. I don't know if they have multiple sizes. Do you know off the top of your head, or is it one standard size for the RV mattress?
I'm not sure. I bet they have different sizes, but you should... And people out there should go and check it out. But that's cool. They do have many different offerings. And like I said, it's sort of a thinner profile and it's lighter. I'm not sure, you know, if it packs up well or how you would store it in the Model Y. But that would be pretty cool. I mean, one of the great things, you know, even if you don't want to sleep in a tent, I sleep terrible in a tent and a sleeping bag and all that. But if you're at a campground where you have like better access. So sure, you can stay in a hotel or a lodge or whatever, but then you have to drive another 30 minutes to get to your trailhead or whatever. But if you could camp right there and just like walk out into the mountains or be right by a lake or a beach or whatever, like that's amazing. We could just wake up, roll out of the backseat of your car and then be right there.
Yeah, super cool. I'm thinking of places like Yosemite or even closer to us, like Breckenridge. Near there, there's a campground right by Dillon Lake, which is great. I've camped in the back of my car there. And Yosemite is especially cool because there's very few hotel rooms, but a lot of camping spots. So if you had this mattress and your Tesla or whatever vehicle, you've got easy access to the park instead of having to drive an hour in every day, which sucks.
Yeah. And I know, I mean, the Y would be more comfy, but in the Element, you could almost stand up, right? You have a little more headroom in that thing, right?
Yeah. I can't quite stand up, but definitely more room in the back of that.
Very cool. Well, check out Ghost Bed. It's more than just a bed. It's a sleep revolution. Family-owned company with 20 years plus experience, and they have over 60,000 five-star reviews.
And one last thing I'll mention about Ghost Bed is Mindy and I ordered ours. It's supposed to come next week. We ordered the Ghost Bed Classic, and that is going to be the mattress we use in our guest area. So if you come, we're always entertaining people and people staying at our house. So if you come stay at our house, you will sleep on the Ghost Bed Classic.
Very cool. So go to ghostbed.com/milehighfi. You could save 50% site-wide, and you could use coupon code milehighfi at checkout. So thanks a lot to Ghost Bed.
Okay, back to Stealth Wealth, Doug. The next point I had, and I alluded to this a little bit earlier, but I've got a good story around this that happened a couple of years ago, is once people know you have money, some people change the way they act around you because they might not have the same amount of money and they might not have the same respect for your money that you have for your money. So a couple of years ago, some people were in town for a visit. And I offered to take them out to dinner just to be nice. And I'm like, hey, yeah, just find a place. I don't know what kind of food you like. And they're like, okay, we'll get back to you. And then they come back with like the most expensive restaurant in town. Like really like a fancy steakhouse. I don't know. If someone offered to buy me a dinner, that's not the approach I would take, no matter, unless it was like a billion. Even then, you know, I'd be modest, I think. I'd pick the Pump House, like a nice mid-level place in Longmont, still good food, or maybe Longspeak Tap, something like that. I wouldn't go absolutely crazy for like a $150, $200 a person dinner thing.
Yeah.
And it's because I was thinking about it, like, I know I've got money, but I also know the amount of work, like I probably spent 2 decades working like 60 or 80 hours a week on these stupid flips and at my real job and on this blog, like there's a lot of blood, like real blood from cutting myself from my home improvements in just time and lack of sleep. And I know everything that went into that money, and it kind of holds you back too, because then you're less likely to spend it because you just want to hold on to all those little dollars. But the other people don't know all the money that went into it or all the time that went into it and hard work. They just see that number and they might not respect it as much as you do.
Did you end up going to the fancy place?
No, I think I responded. And the thing about that is the one justification I could say for people suggesting something like that, like if they knew that we went to places like that frequently, like if we were foodies and we were always going out for fancy dinners, but we don't, like I'm fine with Taco Bell. And these people knew that as well. They knew I didn't like fancy meals, but then there we are. But I forgot what exactly I said. I think I might've said something like, this is kind of odd, like Mindy and I never go to places like this. Do you have any other suggestion or something like that? Maybe I put it a little more mildly, but
deflected a little bit and got a different result. Yeah.
It's just a weird situation, you know, like how do you deal with stuff like that? Maybe next time I'll just pick out the place ahead of time. Like, and I'll set expectations though. Like there's a new White Castle or In-N-Out Burgers coming to town. I'll suggest that. And then at the last minute, like I'll pivot a little bit upward and then they'll be thankful for that. They're getting something better than what they expected.
Yeah. Yeah. I think giving a choice. Well, I mean, now you know. I mean, obviously, it's fine to be like, hey, where do you want to go? But yeah, if you're like, all right, here's two choices, and that kind of sets the mark for what they're expecting.
Yes, and then it's like dealing with kids. You give them options, and then they feel like they're in control. So a little psychological hack. Don't tell us you never learn anything from Mile High Fi audience.
Well, and I don't have any observations because, you know, wealth can change the way people act around you because I haven't been flaunting my net worth on the internet for, 10 years like you, Carl. I don't run into the same issues. And like you said, like we live modestly how we grew up. We drive generally old cars. You get a new one, but like every few years, you got to get a new car. Like people get new cars. It's not the weirdest thing. And it's really not been an issue. I'm trying to think like if maybe like conferences or something like that, where someone may have the impression that I am wealthy, then if that changes things, but I don't think so. And then refer to my point before, I probably wouldn't notice or be like, oh, I don't care that person is acting weird or whatever, and just move on with my life. But when I saw, you know, you said I worked very hard for my money. It was 2 decades of 80-hour work week. So you worked really hard. So you're thinking, I worked really hard for this money. I don't feel that way. Not about you, but about me. So Elizabeth and I were talking recently, and basically, I mean, you mentioned here, like some people maybe make assumptions like you got lucky or something like that. And I mean, I had some luck and some bad luck, right? we've had good stock market returns and stuff, but I also bought a house in like 2005 and lost a lot of money. I have a foreclosure in my permanent record. And, you know, there's been some ups and downs, right? Like I graduated during like the dot-com bubble and blah, 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 right? So no clear wins or clear, you know, defeats or anything like that. But overall, I probably worked hard for about 2 years or so out of the roughly 20 that I've been working. So about 2 years when I was like, oh, I'll climb the corporate ladder. And then I was like, this sucks. I'm just going to try to like be average and stay out of trouble, right? It's too much work to try to be like top 5-10% or so. And that's been fine. And then I got laid off after I had about 10 years in the corporate world. And then I started working for myself, and I worked way less and not that hard. I made a little bit more money, but nothing crazy. And when I look back, I'm just like, I didn't work that hard. And I'm sorry that you feel like you worked so hard. I mean, like there were portions when I worked hard, but either I enjoyed it, so it didn't feel like work, or I don't know. Maybe I did get really lucky. What do you think? Am I way off here?
I think you are right, but you're wrong too. Like you're a smart dude. You went to Georgia Tech for engineering, so don't cut yourself short there. I'm sure getting a degree there was a lot of hard work and that type of thing, but maybe you front loaded it. Maybe you had that on your resume. You were able to get the job. And
yeah.
Yeah. The work thing is very interesting too. I can think of a lot of people who in my life didn't do all, and I'm not saying this is you, Doug, but it's pretty easy to coast in corporate America. It seems like there's probably some rule, like a 10-90 rule or something, or a 20-80 rule, like 20% of the people at any given company, like do 80% of the work or some shit like that. And not that you weren't doing work, but your departure or your great successes might not have moved the needle that much. And to be honest, I don't think I was that great of an employee either. Like there's rock star programmers who can just like do the work of 10 people. And that was not me. I was a bit of a hack. So I don't think I was anything exceptional. I was just able to, or willing to work a little bit harder than other people and maybe volunteer for more difficult things that people were too lazy to. And then I think just advocating for yourself, it's not so much of what you do. It's what you could present to your boss that you did, like taking careful notes about all your achievements, maybe how small they are. You can, most people just don't do that. And yeah, I don't know. In a coding team, if you did a bunch of the work on certain parts of the code, if you leave, it could be detrimental. So you could say, hey, I need a raise or I'm leaving. I don't know. I'm going off on a big tangent here, but
No. I mean, that makes sense. That's the sweet spot that I found in the corporate world. I was just like, okay, if I do a ton more work, it doesn't really matter. Or I could just like do a little bit less, work on my own projects. And, you know, two quick observations. One, as soon as I got laid off and started working for myself, all the waste is gone, right? In a corporate environment, there's all this waste in the systems, which is why you can coast or fucking like do 2 hours of work per week. And like no one really notices, or, you know, you can't do it constantly, but if you do it, say like half of the year, like it's probably fine. So, I mean, there's so much waste in there that you can get away with it. The other thing is, as far as like the promotion, and you were like, oh, it's not really about what you're doing. It's like telling other people. Well, I found like I was really good at telling what I did, but that didn't move the needle enough. So one of the sections that I wrote for our book, The Lazy Book, is all about like how to get promoted and navigating performance reviews and stuff like that. And it's not only about just like keeping good records, but it's like your job should be trying to tell everyone the good job that you're doing, even if you're not doing fucking anything. Like it's almost irrelevant. And I remember when those years that I worked hard, those 2 years, like I remember someone who was moving up pretty quick. I was like, this person is like planning their fucking wedding like all day long. Like this person is doing less work than anyone else on the whole team. Yet he's the person that's like moving up. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? It was really annoying back then. But after, some wisdom was imparted on me, I was like, oh, he just spent his time like getting support from other people versus actually doing any work, which is, it burst the dream. And then, that's why I have a bad attitude. But anyway, when I started working for myself, there's no waste. There's no more waste in the system. So if I only worked like 2 hours a week or whatever, it was like all like very intentional work that wasn't shuffling papers around. It was like, this earns money. So I think that's one reason why I've been like, this really wasn't that like hard. I mean, I learned a lot of stuff. I'm not dumb, but I'm a good blend of like just dumb enough to think you could try to do stuff and make it work.
And I think there's a lesson in that. That might be the sweet spot in life. Like you can be someone like a Larry Page or Sergey Brin, the Google founders, or like an Elon Musk, and just working 80 hours a week on drugs to keep yourself awake. And it just like I read Elon Musk, he tries to eat a hamburger in like 3 bites just so he doesn't have to waste time eating and stuff like that. And that doesn't sound like a very fun life. I think you got, for most people, a life somewhere in the middle is where it's at.
Yeah. So we got a couple quick points, but the one thing I'll mention here is from the, you know, people knowing about our wealth is one thing. And, you know, we're not sharing it publicly or anything like that, but the thing that people will notice, and I think Darren and Jolene ran into this, is when you have a huge amount of free time, because that's unusual. So when I took my trip in 2019, drove to Alaska, I took 6 weeks off and just, I was not doing any work, right? I did like an hour per week or something like that. It was great. It was fine. And maybe a couple people asked questions, but if we think about, you know, folks in our lives, like occasionally someone does take a very long trip. So even if I'm like, hey, I'm doing this long 6 week trip, and someone's like, oh, what about work? And I'm like, oh, I scheduled and planned time off. It's like a little mini sabbatical or whatever. And I think if you just frame it that way, like people won't ask too many questions, because you know some people that have taken like fairly long trips that are outside the FI community, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Up to a year. And that's a great solution, Doug. Just you're not really lying. You're just kind of deflecting the question. I'm taking time off. Or you could allude to some, maybe I'm trying to find myself some issues, some uncomfortable issues that people will be too scared to probe further on. Like,
Yeah. That's a good one. You can frame, you're like, oh yeah, I went to like a church camp back when I was blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, I really don't want to talk about it. And then they're like, okay, fine. But I think, God. Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't ask a follow-up question on that, right?
I don't even want to ask a follow-up question to this. And this is, you're just hinting at it.
So I think that's a great way to do it. And it's not that unusual. And the thing is, like you and I think we'd accept someone's answer. And then I think we would be like, is there anything else going on? Or do you think maybe you're not going to go back to work? Like we know the questions that we could ask. So an inquisitive person that actually did want to know more, like they would ask a few more questions. Maybe they would have to probe you a little bit more, but
like at the church camp.
Right. I thought it was like this retreat thing. Yeah, you don't know. It's a joke. It's a joke. Hilarious joke, right? Everyone loves it. All right. So what do you do when people ask for money? I think you kind of covered it here, Carl. But did it really come up from like random people emailing you on the internet?
It did. Yeah, actually, it did. It's always, oh, my business is suffering, blah blah blah. I just need this to buy this equipment, and then I'll be back on my feet. So it has come up. I think it's good to be generous with money, and we are giving lots of money away. One of the things that Mindy and I are doing are paying for some people. We call it the Mindy and Money Scholarship. We're going to offer people money, mostly younger folks, to attend things like an economy or a campfire, because I think those people might not have the money and there's a lot of value to going to an in-person thing. So we want to give money away, but to people who aren't asking for it, but we can see who need it, which is a little bit delicate of a balance.
Oh, yeah. Do you know how you're going to award those?
The first thing we're doing is working with Dan Sheeks, who does his Sheeks Freaks to educate like high school and college kids about money. And obviously, they're not going to have any money because some of them don't have jobs and they're not in school. And paying $500 could be a pretty big knock against whatever money they have. So we're giving him money, and then he is going to sort that part out. And then we're going to have a scholarship thing where people can fill out a form and state their case, and we'll do it on a case-by-case basis. We haven't done anything yet, so TBD how that works out.
Gotcha. And then will you require them to do any sort of like, hey, here's a wrap-up? You know, that way, I mean, I think people like get more out of an event if they reflect more afterwards. So if you sort of make that part of the deal, they'll get more out of it, and maybe like other people can learn from it and be inspired or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Maybe publish some of their responses, but it would also cause them to maybe take the event a little bit more seriously if we expect something from them at the end of it.
Okay. That's pretty cool. All right. Well, anything else on your mind with this one, Carl?
Yeah, actually there is, Doug, since I told you how I value my money a lot because I work so hard for it and you said you didn't. So now my attitude for you has changed a little bit. I'm just saying we're going to go to Cincinnati and I'm not going to ask for the fancy restaurant, but they have Skyline here. The In-N-Out is going to be like right close to your house. We could probably walk there like in 5 or 10 minutes.
Where's it
going to
be? I didn't even know this.
Yeah. Like, are you a fan of In-N-Out? I think it's overrated personally, but.
You know what? I haven't had In-N-Out before. I know there's a couple locations here in Denver.
Yeah. It's going to be in the Costco like parking lot. They've got some little area there when you pull in. It's going to be out there.
Oh, no shit. I will definitely check it out.
Yeah. I think people like it just because it's hard to get. I mean, it's fine. Like any fried burger tastes great. But yeah. I don't think it's worth waiting 14 hours in line for and getting into a fist fight, which happened when the last one opened here in Thornton.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say I've passed the one in Thornton and there's always been like a line and I'm like, yeah, I'll check it out sometime. And yeah, I don't know why I haven't tried it when, you know, we've been in California, but I think there's been like more compelling places to go and I didn't care that much. Yeah. So people love it though.
I think Chick-fil-A is overrated too. And I know that's pretty controversial. Like it's fried chicken, man. You could buy it in a bag at Costco, stick it in the air fryer. It tastes the same.
Well, the thing is the Popeyes chicken sandwiches. Have you had one of those?
Oh, I do like Popeyes.
Holy
yeah.
Fuck. Those are so much better than Chick-fil-A. And yeah. I'm from Georgia. You know, we grew up on that stuff.
Man, I might go there after this. Doug, yeah. You want to treat me since you've got all this money that you don't care about?
Yeah. Yeah. I should rephrase it. No one fucking email me about that. But, I want to just give one more statement about it and maybe we'll talk about it in the future, but like we didn't do anything that unusual. That was the main point. Like we worked our jobs. We did stuff. Like I think we earned like an average amount. Like we were never like high earners. And we see a lot of examples of that. And I think people assume that we had to have earned a huge amount of money or like you said, got lucky or something like that. But we didn't. It was just like, it took 20 years. We worked and we had jobs. We didn't get big houses and we didn't get new cars. That's pretty much it.
Yeah,
it's boring.
Yeah, that's exactly right. In my case, I wish I had less money and given myself more time because I traded in tons and tons of time to have this net worth, which is super silly. But if you're willing to like flip houses and stuff for 2 decades, you could have the same thing as me. Yeah, there's a little bit more to it than that. But what I'm saying is it's not like if you tell someone to go to medical school and become a plastic surgeon and make $1 million a year, they're probably not going to be able to replicate that. But I don't think either of our stories are super hard to replicate. Definitely easier than becoming a plastic surgeon or starting a rocket company or some shit like that.
Yeah, so much. All right, cool. Well, thanks, Carl. We'll catch you on the next episode.
See you soon, Doug.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington, the Balder host, and Carl Jensen is the cool, sexy one. If you dig the show, please do 3 things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. Carl and I are just two guys with microphones that sit in my basement and talk. So we'll catch y'all next week. What's the story with your hat?
Yes. So I have a neighbor who works for Apple, and she's a little bit higher up. And she comes to my house one day and said, "Hey, Apple is having some contest for employees. If we win it, we might get a hat. I don't care about them. My husband couldn't care less about hats. If I win this thing, do you want it?" I'm like, "Sure." So it turns out she won it and gave this hat to me, and I didn't think much of it after that. Fast forward a couple months later, we're in New York City, and I go to the Apple store there with this hat on. I didn't even think about it. I just happened to have the hat on. And I'm standing there looking around at stuff, and all of a sudden I hear someone come up behind me like, "Hey, how's it going, sir?" And I look around, and there's like three Apple employees standing to my left. I'm like, "I guess it's going fine. Like, what's up?" They're like, "Yeah, we're just wondering if we could help you out with anything or what you think." And they start asking me all these questions. So I think they saw this hat, and I think it's kind of a known thing with Apple people that this was like maybe higher ups or people who work at Apple HQ get this hat. So they thought I was like someone important and were like buttering up to me. I'm just like, "Hey, man, I'm just looking at your overpriced stuff. Like, I don't really care about anything." And I looked at one of the guys and I saw him looking at the hat, and I'm like, "Oh, okay. Now I know why you're talking to me. It's because of this hat." Like, yeah. Like, why are there three of you there? My first thought was, they think I'm trying to shoplift something. And maybe that was it. Maybe I'm just reading too much into the whole situation. Yeah.
Do you know like what the criteria was to get the hat or anything?
She told me, but I didn't care enough to pay attention. But I do know if you go on eBay, I've seen these hats sell for like $100 to $200, supposedly.
Really? Yeah. Interesting. Well, when I saw you wear it, I was like, "What is?" I remember the symbol. And for the people that don't know, it's like the activity rings on like an Apple Watch or like your phone, or if you have an iPhone. But the funny thing is, like, you don't have an Apple Watch or an iPhone. So I was like, "Why do you have that hat?" It was very curious.
Yes, I don't. I do have a MacBook, which is in front of me, and I think I might go to an iPhone for my next phone. The Tesla doesn't like the Google Pixel phone. And the Pixel seems to have issues, so I'm kind of frustrated with them. So I might be back to Apple after years of being off.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I knew. You got like an iPhone 13 or something, right? And then you dropped it, and you were like, "Fuck this thing. I'm going to get a Pixel."
Yeah, I'm curious to hear about this. You might never use this. Like, I'm old, I'm uncoordinated and can't type well, so I use the voice to text. And that's pretty bad on the Android phone, but it was even worse on the Apple phone. Like, there was a lot of latency there, and it didn't seem to work that well. Do you ever use that feature, Doug? And if you do, how well does it work? Because maybe it's improved since last time I tried an iPhone.
I don't use it too often. It's pretty good. I would say it's pretty accurate most of the time, but I tend not to use it. I just type it out instead of, but I do notice you leave long messages or you do voice typing or whatever. Like, you're like whispering into your phone. Georgie's like chasing her tail, but she's going to knock something over in a second. So I'm like, "Don't bump your head, Georgie. All right. You got to be..." A lot of shit going on in here. Jesus.
Yeah. If you're watching on YouTube, or if you're not watching on YouTube, now's the time to start, because the Mile High Fi dog is making an appearance today.
Yeah. Jeez. We're going to see how it goes. Anyway, so you got this cool hat. It's pretty exclusive. I do recommend iPhones. Like, I have a fairly, I think my phone's almost 7 years old at this point. And, you know, knock on wood, like, the battery is still working. I haven't dropped it. There are some issues with it, which we could talk about maybe on a random show we do have coming up before too long. But I like the iPhones, and I have a Mac, and I've used it for years. And at this point, I'm like, I could switch over. Maybe it's a little cheaper to get some other, you know, Android device for like comparable or better photos. But at the same time, I'm just like, this works. It's really, I get a new one, transfer it over, and it's just, it all works fine.
Yeah, if I were you, I mean, the fact that you've had it for 7 years, but that's not uncommon with Apple phones. And I don't think I hear those same stories with people with Android phones, with Samsung or Pixel phones. They seem more disposable. It's a testament to the quality of Apple products, which I like a lot.
Yeah. And the one before that, I had like an iPhone 3 and then maybe like, I had a 4 and then I had a 6 and then a 10 and I'll probably end up, I may get a 50, I think they're to 15. So yeah, I mean, they last a really long time if you don't drop them or, you know, do anything weird with them. So nice. Knock on wood.